you know, to the extent that maybe there is a silver lining to this crisis, I think it is leading to maybe less stigma of addiction and certainly a more enlightened approach to responding to the problem.
Dr. Kolodny, I want to thank you for being with us. Of course, we'll continue to follow us. Dr. Andrew Kolodny is co-director of the Opioid Policy Research at the Heller School for Social Policy and Management at Brandeis University. That does it for our show. I'll be speaking Thursday night at Walter Reed Theater at Lincoln Center at 6 p.m., on Saturday at 9:30 in the morning at McCormick Place, and on Sunday at 1 at Greenfest at the Jacob Javits Center in New York. You can check our website. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the 17th Annual Village Building Convergence. The VBC is a celebration of placemaking and permaculture, and will have more than 20 sites throughout the Portland area that will draw people together to build shared projects designed by the neighbors to fill a community need. The theme of VBC is home, and the many events will happen between June 1st and June 17th, and include partnerships with Petalpalooza, Right to Dream, and more. Again, that's the 17th Annual Village Building Convergence, taking place until June 17th at sites all over Portland. More information can be found about the various events of VBC 17 at KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Which way, America? Which way, America? Which way, America? Which way to go? This is my country, and I want to know which way America is going to go.
There is many a road to travel, many a hill to climb. I'm gonna find the straightest road and walk it till the end of time. Which way America? Which way America? Which way America? Which way to go? This is my country and I want to know which way America is going to go. Which way America? Which way America? Which way America? Which way to go? This is my country and I want to know which way America is going to go.
There is many a storm before us, many a choice to make. I'm gonna ask the Lord above to show me the road to take.
Which way America? Which way America? Which way America, which way to go? This is my country and I want to know which way America is going to go.
how can I do a show after that? So obviously I don't mean to be making light of anything that's been going on. I just thought that was a strangely appropriate song. Comes from Up With People, the Sing Out musical. Everybody remember that? Featuring the Colwell brothers in a cast of 150. And that was the tenor, Charles Woodard. Okay. I could say more about Up With People, but if anybody's interested, you can call up and ask me. I'll try to put it on my page for this program. I've been a little retrograde in updating my page every week. But anyway, this is Wednesday Talk Radio, and I'm Paul Rowland. Let's get started. That's Which Way America. Yeah, Which Way America. I just thought that was so appropriate after having watched a bunch of that right-wing rally on Sunday there in Terry Shrunk Plaza. And hearing the country singer, I could have actually taped some of that. I could have had that. And Joey Gibson, the would-be demagogue. Well, he's already partway there. And so, yeah, we're going to be talking about that some more. You heard it on Joe and Abe yesterday with Gregory McKelvey. I'm sure people have been talking. I'm sure a lot of you were there. So just to start off, there's some important factual information. I don't know if anybody heard Mike Marshman, our police chief, on OPB yesterday, but he made some statements that, thanks to the Mercury, picked right up on the Portland Mercury newspaper and discredited them. So he said, he said that the Portland police did not demand photos of demonstrator IDs. Let me just read this from Dick Vanderhart. Antifa demonstrators opposing a right-wing free speech rally on Sunday. Oh, that's, I'm sorry, that's the photo caption. Portland Police Chief Mike Marshman appeared on OPB's Think Out Loud yesterday afternoon to discuss police response to Sunday's largely peaceful convergence of rallies in downtown Portland. Marshman didn't appear totally in command of the specifics of the police response, and he uttered one blatant falsehood. The chief told OPB's audience the Portland police had not required Antifa demonstrators or those marching with them to have their IDs photographed in order to get out of a police kettle, a kettle being where a bunch of people are funneled into and surrounded by the police in a confined area, in which officers surround a group on all sides. That's what they just said. I don't have the precise verbiage of Marshman's response. I wish I did. I heard that. I wrote down some notes. But the chief stated it was not PPB policy to demand such photographic evidence and that perhaps it was federal police officers who demanded photos. According to tons of people who were caught up in the kettle, including reporters working during the event, that's wrong. Yes, sirree. Okay, and then another thing is his strange approval, disapproval, I'm not sure what it was, about these militia members actually assisting federal officers chase, pin down, and handcuff a protester who tried to enter the pro-Trump rally at Terry Shrunk Plaza. So I was at the rally. I missed that. I actually left kind of early because I was kind of tired and cross. No excuse. But I didn't see this particular event for sure. So there's a photo of a right-wing militia member grabbing zip-tie handcuffs from a federal agent's belt. Now, could you imagine that? Could you imagine? So I heard Marshman, and he said, no, they try to discourage that. They don't really support that, but sometimes it just happens, is kind of what he said, which I thought was utterly bizarre, and he just sort of bowled right through the host, whose name I strangely can't remember, continual questions. I thought he did a decent job of trying to pin the Marshman down. Let me just keep reading this. So the incident involving the private citizen is under review with the U.S. Attorney's Office. Department of Homeland Security spokesperson Lucy Martinez tells the Mercury. The man working security for the rally is seen on multiple videos assisting DHS police officers from the Federal Protective Service arrest the guy. At one point, he unfurls a zip-tie handcuff from the federal agent's belt before handing it to the agent, who then puts them on the wrists of the guy who's pinned down. It was captured on video by a blogger, and they have the video link to this article. The feds are reviewing right-wing militia members' assistance with cops making arrests by Doug Brown in the Portland Mercury. It was also captured by Oregonian reporter Jim Ryan, and it was photographed by OPB's Brian Vance. The man appears to be a member of a right-wing militia group. The group has run security at previous pro-Trump rallies in the area. Terry Shrunk Plaza is federal property, and the pro-Trump rally had a permit from the federal government to be there. Here's what the DHS's Martinez tells the Mercury about the arrest. The federal protective officers were in the process of removing an unauthorized protester from the demonstration. FPS officers were operating within the scope of their authority to ensure the safety of all persons and support the peaceful expression of their First Amendment rights. And that's all they said, the DHS said, apparently. The incident involving the private citizen is under review with the U.S. Attorney's Office. Though the Portland Police Bureau had nothing to do with a specific arrest, we asked PPB spokesman Pete Simpson if they have a policy on this sort of thing. Quote, I'm aware of the image video and it is FPS DHS. My understanding is that event organizers were asked to make clear that nobody should interfere with or get involved in arrests. Not sure what the scenario is on this arrest, so you'd have to check with FPS, Federal Protective Service. There's not really a Portland Police Bureau policy about this kind of thing, but as a practice would prefer not to have private citizen involvement in arrest. But there have been times where private security, think bar bouncers, loss prevention, etc., have jumped in to assist an officer struggling with a suspect. So that's that. Another thing reported on in The Guardian by Jason Wilson out of Portland, Republicans use alt-right Portland rally to recruit new members. Efforts to encourage young conservatives to get active, led by chairman of the local Republican Party, were uncovered in a recording from the rally. Republicans have used a controversial alt-right rally in Portland held in the wake of the killing spree allegedly perpetrated by a local white supremacist to recruit new members to the party. The effort was led by James Buchall, chair of the Multnomah County Republican Party, who urged attendees at the rally on Sunday to join the GOP. Details of his efforts were uncovered in a recording from the rally. Quote, I want to say, since I'm involved in the Republican Party, that the structure to change the government officials in a political party, Buchall told the crowd, and we are looking for young conservatives to get active in the Multnomah County Republican Party. He added, we're looking for young conservatives to step up and run for local offices. We need to get control of local school boards and every other local district. We need people on the streets talking to people, knocking on doors, making phone calls. The party's there. The party's open. Come and help us win America back. And it continues for a couple pages. People are interested, go to that. Republicans use alt-right Portland rally to recruit new members. Jason Wilson in The Guardian. And yeah, that comes on the heels, obviously, of Buchall. Well, first, you know, those people who apparently, some of whom, many of whom ended up marching on 82nd Avenue, the 82nd Avenue of the Roses march that was canceled because of all that controversy. And then a march did happen, led by this guy Joey Gibson, and the cops apparently gave them bus passage back to the park after their march so they could get to their vehicles. A lot of controversy around that, and he ended up saying that he would consider having these militia members, you know, the three percenters, the Oath Keepers, who were both present on Sunday at Terry Shrunk, to do security for the Republican Party, you know, which is again odd because it was exactly those people's presence, more I guess the so-called alt-right, which I guess you could make some differentiation between them and those militia groups, but there seemed to be a fair amount of overlap considering they were all together there on Sunday. And So anyway, it's odd that the reason that was canceled is because of those people were going to march with the Republicans. And then, yes, there was a threat to physically remove those people, which led to the event being canceled, apparently largely because the Portland police said they couldn't guarantee the safety of everybody. And so it was canceled. Then Joey Gibson, one of his stepping stones to this Sunday's rally was the 82nd Avenue March of a month or so ago. And then out of that, the Republican party chairman locally says that he's willing to have these militia members do protection. Then they actually did do protection and assisted the police on Sunday. And Bukal was actually addressing the route. He said not in an official capacity, but I'm not sure how you could address a crowd of, I estimated, well over 500 people. Some people said there was not nearly that many. I think there was over 500 people, but it's not all that important. There's a lot more counter demonstrators. Anyway, I think it's strange to him. I mean, I see how in some situations you can sort of separate those things. I just don't see how he could not be there in his official capacity as chairman of the GOP in Multnomah County and be actively recruiting to the GOP. That seems disingenuous at best. So there's this whole strange hodgepodge of stuff happening, all very concerning. I know there's been a lot of issues around infighting before, during, and after in this general rubric of the left. I personally have questions about what it actually means. I'm not sure we can have a conversation about that, but we're already a quarter after eight, and I've been talking by myself for quite a while. I do have some other articles I could read from, but the number to call is 503-231-8187, especially if you are at the rally and witness some of these things, and try to get a little deeper into these aspects that were explored on the Abe and Joe show yesterday. If you have a very different take on it, we're welcome to hear, willing to hear that, certainly. I'd like to get we had a pretty good conversation going, I thought, last week. So I just like to give people the space to continue the conversation. These are really intense things. I personally, I don't know, I was almost feeling like just needing to take a step back. Like, this is just kind of overwhelming, all this stuff that's happening so fast. We're all, trying to figure it out as we go along. Nobody has the final answer. And so there, 503-231-8187. I also was interested in, there's a few other things that happened. Greg McKelvey went into it somewhat yesterday. I have a couple things maybe to add. He talked about the war dance, war dances, I think he said in his article, is the war dance that was started off by this guy Tiny Tosa, I think his name is. I have it somewhere. Anyway, he's apparently an American Samoan or a Samoan man who apparently it's become this sort of little ritual that they have, these alt-writers. I guess he's pals with Joey Gibson. And he did this little, I couldn't even watch it. I just was just offended by the whole idea of it, having, been close to Native American friends and communities over the years and participated actually in, dances and ceremonies and cultural events that I have utmost respect for and actually don't talk about that much, partly because I have so much respect for them. But anyway, he did this thing, and it was just really sordid, I think is the proper word. And so that was set a really bad tone for me for that event. And I actually outreached to a Samoan community, at least one person, and asked if there is, any discussion of the use of what appears to be an actual traditional dance or his version or inspired by, actual Samoan practices, and to have them use that to have him use that in this context, I was offended, you know, indirectly, as someone who believes he has a certain amount of sensitivity to these things. I'd be interested in what the Samoan community or the Pacific Island community has to say about this man, if there's been any pushback towards him, anybody attempting to, hey, you know, rein him in, you know, take him in like some uncles, say, what are you doing? Anyway, that would set the tone. And then, well, it was the first guy, he started off a country singer, you know, he's all right. Can't remember his name. He then did the Star Spangled Banner, and it's true, he mangled one of the first lines of the Star Spangled Banner, which, I don't know, I'm not a big fan of the national anthem myself, but I do know the words, and I believe I could actually sing it without mangling it. And I kind of slapped my face and looked around. I expected people to be kind of up in arms, like, oh, you disrespected our national anthem. But I don't know, they just sort of glossed over that little glitch. Anyway, then Joey Gibson started speaking, and I'll talk more about him. But first, we got Kathleen. Go ahead, you're on the air.
I just have a question. I just want to throw it out. I was listening to what you were saying a little while ago, and I kind of want to get your take on it or other people's take. I was at a family get-together maybe a month ago, could have been a little bit over that, and there was a young family member who said that he was dating some of the demonstrators that were coming in. They were being bused from various places. The name just evades me right now. The militants that are out kind of destroying the city. Their names are...
Who are you referring to? I'm not sure.
The people that go to Seattle, you know, they go in, they're wearing masks and everything, and they're destroying cities and...
Destroying cities?
Well, who is it that comes in? The young people that are wearing the masks that are demonstrating
in
the town?
I don't know. There are various people, I guess. The people...
Oh, there's a name for them.
The Black Bloc?
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I should have written some notes down. Anyway, he said that he's been dating a variety of women who are coming in. They're being bussed in. They're
being bussed in.
Uh-huh. Pardon me?
Being bussed in?
Yes. And I was just kind of curious if you are aware of this.
No.
He was saying that... Pardon me?
Not really, no.
Yeah, he was saying that he's in contact with these women. He dates these women when they come in, and you know, they demonstrate. They're being paid by some millionaire to come in. Who
oh God! Oh, George Soros! That's such an old canard. That's ridiculous. That if someone can actually give a proof that George Soros is actually, and they said that about Black Lives Matter demonstrators.
No, it's not. No. It's not those people.
No, I understand, but they said there's, you know, Antifa. That's probably what you're talking about. Antifa.
What do you mean, Antifa?
I mean, I don't know. You're the one who's supposed to be bringing me some information. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I'm trying to, but I can't remember the name of the group that comes into Seattle, and they, you know, they're breaking windows and they're...
I don't know. Yeah. I honestly don't know what you're talking about. So if you want to, you know, find out something and bring it to us, we'd love to hear it.
Okay. Well, I guess my question would be, do you know anything about somebody who's a billionaire who's paying?
That's what I'm saying. People accuse this George Soros. That's what I say. Okay. People keep saying that George Soros is paying for Black Lives Matter demonstrators.
No,
for now they're saying
them.
Now they're saying that
they're
he's
not the demonstrators.
Right. Whatever. I don't know. You don't even know who you're talking about. So we're
okay. Well, that's okay. I just thought I would throw that out there, but I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the
group.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much for calling.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Bye bye. Whatever, you know, I mean, it's like you expect me to provide you with the information, the fake news that you're trying to present. It's ridiculous. Oh, anarchists. Okay, fine. That's why I said, you know, Black Bloc, Antifa, you know, whatever. Lump them all together, anarchists. But no, I mean, George Soros paying for anarchists to go, you know, break windows in Seattle, whatever. I mean, come on. What world are we living in? You know? Gosh darn it, call up Rush Limbaugh or something. Anyway, so I think we had another caller. Dee Dee was on here. Go ahead.
Good morning, Paul. I'm calling because I was a peacekeeper at the city hall with the Portland Stands United
States. We can barely hear you. Are you on speakerphone or something?
I am not on speakerphone, but I'll try to yell louder. Can you hear me, Paul?
Well, it's a little better.
I was a peacekeeper at City Hall. I showed up early for the two-hour training. I was there from 10 to 5 or so, or 30. And I was predominantly at Southwest 4th and Madison. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Continue. Get to the point.
So I observed several things, and I wanted to say that there was a CNN radio live coverage announcer, very fearful. Oh, and they're doing this, and I saw the vandalism, and the police have to take control. You know, it was carrying on, all this fear. And I said, well, those are police infiltrators. I was watching this. And so then afterwards, when I'm done getting our people out to end our permitted event at the time we're supposed to, I went down a few minutes later, after the police had come through, saying that their justification, which is not valid, for the violence was that someone had vandalized the women's restroom. So I went down to the restroom. There were no bricks missing from the building. There were no bricks chopped, broken, or damaged. There was no pile of bricks. There were no broken, thrown bricks anywhere. There was one phrase written with black permanent marker, one time in one place, and there were four stickers. Some of them were white stickers with a black swastika with a red slash to it. Now, I go into a middle school bathroom stall, and there's more vandalism than that. And Powell's has 100 times more than that in some of the restrooms. And we don't spend millions of dollars on police gearing up with overtime and hazardous pay and all that just to, and they didn't even clean up, you know, this vandalism. So I was watching from 4th and Madison that the police are provoking. There's unequal enforcement. There were people, there was postings on the corners of Terry Swank Plaza that there had to be no weapons on federal property. And I saw people with automatic weapons, rifles, obvious big weapons held in threatening ways, and they were not being apprehended or taken by the police. I saw people with shields on both sides, and then I later also saw YouTube that others had seen of wood shields with Nazi signs in Terry Swank Plaza. And I heard folks saying lots of funny things. They said the police were good. They had to be there to keep the groups from entering each other. Well, they didn't do a very good job of that because there were lots of these threatening folks coming into my group trying to threaten folks. And we would just escort them with 3, 5, 6 or whatever folks watching them that they not provoke and cause all the trouble they were trying to. And the 100 to 200 or so folks that the videos, and I couldn't see everything from that corner, that were in Terry Swank Plaza, a lot of those were their security, their 3 percenters, the oath keepers, the party organizers, the media, and a lot of rubberneckers or other folks who were just come there doing live streaming for YouTube showing what was wrong with them. So the actual numbers of people who were paid as their job to be there versus folks who may have wanted to come because those are their values wasn't that big, but the police were not having equal numbers. That Thursday morning, Ted Wheeler promised he would have equal numbers of cops, equally garbed, equally, you know, threatening whatever, facing both directions. No, they were predominantly threatening Chapman, and they'd be pushing folks, and say, you have to get back on the sidewalk. They were on the sidewalk, go further back on the sidewalk. They were further back. Get off the sidewalk. I mean, they were just pushing.
Well, to a large extent, I mean, I saw that dynamic too. I mean, but just a slight pushback. I mean, in some ways, it was also due. I mean, I think it's important to be clear about this to the dynamic, because there, you know, the right wing rally was kind of focused inward on a stage. It was kind of self, and the layout of Terry Shrunk is kind of surrounded by shrubbery. It's kind of like a little bowl shaped area. So the counter demonstrators were like, all their energy was focused at them. So in some sense, I can kind of see it, the sense to that. But I think overall, your description is totally right. I think I felt like largely what the police to me did, and just in my how they affected me and other people, is that you had to walk like three blocks out of your area rather than directly walk across the street to go into one of the other rallies. But it wasn't, like you say, there was no real, they weren't really able to keep people out of the other rallies. They're basically just trying to keep the masses of people. I mean, obviously you didn't, it would have been, you know, what would have happened if there weren't any police and those two groups just went at it? It could have gotten ugly. You got to admit that. Hello?
Well, I saw police being violent to nonviolent people. The double standard.
Oh, no,
others
totally.
Had more weapons. Other people were threatening. Other people are posted online with pictures of their, you know, warrants for their arrests and their violent records, and people giving out free ice cream and saying we don't like fascism. You know, we're treated very differently.
Yeah, and that's been going on ever since, as we know, for forever, and it seems like it's aggravated by the fact that, you know, when you have 3%ers or Oath Keepers helping with arrests, when you've got, as you said, you know, unequal policing, all these people kettled and people, you know, having their IDs photographed. No, totally. I don't mean to minimize things. I do think that also, but just sort of the thought, as a thought experiment, what would have happened if, you know, those two groups actually gone at it is just an interesting one to consider. I'm not saying that the police are necessary. Maybe that would be better. Maybe.
Well,
you know,
we did have pretty brave, strong, courageous, skilled folks at de-escalating or at defense.
But come on, there's no way they could have de-escalated if there had been no police. I mean, it would have been a brawl, you got to admit.
But I don't think police de-escalate.
Oh, I don't agree either. I'm not saying it's a solution. I'm just saying.
And they were certainly falsifying evidence and lying and claiming these are weapons, et cetera, when obviously you can go there. There's no missing bricks. There's no new bricks. There's no new mortar. You know?
Right. Well, listen, let's give other people a chance to call. Any last thoughts?
No, thanks. Bye.
Okay. 503-231-818. Whoops. Liam, don't leave the board like that in a moment of... All right. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Where is the, you know, where is this going is another question. I mean, so obviously, you know, you have the various elements there. You had various socialist groups, various social justice organizations, various formations, so-called Black Bloc. Antifa seems to be growing in numbers and strength. But what's the long-term strategy? I mean, is massing and doing counter protests at these rallies, is that, obviously that's not the be all and end all. That's not going to really nip this potential actual fascist resurgence in the bud. It's actually already budded and is sprouting. You do seem to have a lot of confluences happening. You've got a Trump regime, which now seems to be perhaps threatened with some possible consequences, legal consequences, but that still leaves the rest of the regime and the cabinet. But you've also got this resurgent alt-right, and you've got these militias, and you've got, you know, local demagogues popping up all over the place. And is the so-called left up to the task? What are the approaches that we need to think about and pursue? Well, let's go to Oliver. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hello?
I just wanted to kind of chime in on a few random thoughts. I've been following this very closely. I was out at the Montevilla Park counter-protest on April 29th. And I recognized a lot of the similar players. I think the one really important thing to get out here is it's very clear that we have militia sympathizers on the Portland Police Bureau, and I think we need subpoena power to do some digging and get some concrete evidence that actually proves this once and for all.
Where is Anonymous and WikiLeaks? I mean, they got to have, like, you know, Facebook and email. You know, there's got to be some traces if that's true.
I've thought about that too. That's a really good point. You know, I mean, we have a lot of talent, if you will, here in Portland, and I've often wondered why hasn't anybody ever dug anything up and presented some hardcore evidence. I mean, this would really be a game changer if we could connect these identities. That it just seems so clear to me. Like out at Montevilla, you know, Jeremy Christian, I've been emotional about this because I was standing 2 feet in front of Christian. And, you know, and when he came out with a bat yelling racial slurs, at the very least that should have been menacing. And the police took the bat away, made it disappear like an accomplice in the situation, and patted him on the back. You know, and there's all kinds of different arguments about, you know, this or that. But the police knew exactly who he was. The guy's fresh out of parole.
So you think the bat could have actually been considered, could have been a parole violation?
Yes.
Huh.
And I said that to the press Sunday when I was down there. I can't remember if it was 2 or 6, but I was on a live feed. And I said that. I said, you know, this at the very least, we may not have prevented him from murdering down the line, but I think at the very least we could have saved 2 lives because it would have been a revoke.
Right.
At the very least, even the minor misdemeanor charge of menacing, that's what menacing is. If you threaten someone's life, and they're in fear, that's it. All they have to do is be afraid. That's menacing. And so I'm very suspicious. Something doesn't smell right. And then as things were unfolding downtown Sunday, you know, I wore a jacket, a business jacket, and a straw hat, and I just walked right on in over to Terry Trump Plaza. I spent an hour taking pictures of all these guys. Conversations I heard were just mind-boggling. I mean, there clearly was weapons there. There clearly was people with concealed weapons. The militia, the 3%ers, this is not the counter-protesters. These are the guys that the police were protecting. And so the police come out and show, all these slingshots and marbles. Oh my God, they had marbles. And not one shred of investigation happened on the weapons that were there at Terry Trump Plaza. And I could hear these guys, these 3%ers, as militia, they were clearly identified. I could hear them talking about everybody that was walking in and out. Oh, that's Red Hawk. He's Black Bloc. Watch him. This and that. And I'm like, how the heck did they know all this? Are they sharing intelligence with the federal government or our local government?
Those are good questions too. I mean, I do wish we had some incredible sleuths. You know, I mean, I should be doing more investigative journalism myself. Those are all good questions. And you know, that whole issue about Jeremy Christian and his, and you know, the line. You know, I admit I've kind of fallen into a little bit of this too. You know, I'm very sympathetic to the whole issue of you know, people undergoing, you know, mental and emotional distress and illness. Mm-hmm. And I definitely saw that him as a very disturbed individual. He was an outlier. I mean, there's just no two ways around it. He was definitely an outlier on all sides there. I think legitimately they really didn't want him part of their march and they couldn't really control him. But that said, I mean, it's just too easy to just say, oh, you know, the police said, oh yeah, we think he's mentally ill. They actually said that. Well, then, okay, then, you know, you're saying he's mentally ill. He's got a serious record. He's carrying a bat. He's menacing people. He's saying all this outrageous, hateful, threatening stuff. It's like, yeah, well, either arrest him for menacing, as you suggested, or get him some help. And they didn't either. And, you know, unfortunately, We saw what he did.
There's a lot of knowns there. I mean, it's these, the police just standing around like they're protecting them. This is, I'm going back to the 29th of April at the Montevilla Park, where I'm 2 feet away from that, from the murderer. You know, and that's the thing, is that this so-called hate speech that they're calling so-called free speech, it incites murder. And we can't look past it. We can't just ignore that and say, oh, well, he's got a right to free speech. Well, how, he has a right to incite murder? They have a right to incite murder with their free speech? There's too much knowns about this Christian character for them not to have made more direct, concise intervention. It almost feels like he was allowed, like an attack dog, to bite at the heels of the counter-protesters. And I know that's a wild allegation to some people, but it feels that way to me, and I was there on the front lines witnessing that.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that testimony.
Sure. Thank you for the show.
All right. And we got Dustin up next.
Yeah, hi. I own a business in downtown in the old Chinatown area in Portland, so I get to see and hear a lot about what goes on down there. I've been in Portland for 3 years now, and it's the same everywhere, and it's the same small scale as it is large scale. We have extremists on both sides of the field, and they're both kind of on opposite sides, pointing at each other and spouting off stuff. That's the wrong effing thing to do. Like, people need to wake up already. You come together, okay?
When did
the battle ever change against the government, against the police? They keep pulling things over our eyes. Has anyone ever seen the movie PCU? I mean, it's made fun of for an hour and a half to be a rally or...
Hey, you got to watch your language, all right?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry about that. But if someone posts up that there's a rally or a protest, why do 1,000 people with no jobs, who has nothing better to do...
Wait a second. What do you mean no jobs? I mean, come on. You're making these wild generalizations. What do you mean? Ask every single one of those people if they had a job?
Most of those people don't have a job.
Well, how do you know that?
How do I know that?
Yeah.
Look at them. We're,
what do you mean look at them? What do you mean look at them? Come on.
Who takes off work to go to a rally for half of the day?
Well, that rally was on Sunday for one thing. So, I mean, that's like, if you're talking about Sunday, which we're talking about today, then you're totally off base.
Okay.
So what's your point?
What my point is, everyone in the Portland area likes to be a cause head instead of actually doing something.
What do you mean actually doing something? Maybe these causes are actually doing something. You think people like fighting against civil rights wasn't a cause?
Oh,
I think people fighting against
civil rights is a cause. That's not the way to do it, though. You don't show up with signs about Donald Trump to fight about civil rights at the Washington Square. You go to the government. Why does no one go to Seattle? Or, I mean, Salem? Where the government offices are.
Well, plenty of people
do.
Listen.
No one goes down there and riots. No one goes and sits in front of the
well, I've been to protests at Salem myself. Lots of people go to protests at Salem. You know. Well, anyway.
When's the last time we saw a protest?
This guy's abusive, so he's going to have to go. Jane, are you there? Do we have Jane?
Hello?
Leah, go ahead. You're on the air.
I'm on the air?
You are.
I'm not. I just called. I don't even know who...
I'm telling you, you're on the air. Do you want to talk to us?
Oh. Yeah, I'm just... do you have any... I turned my radio down. Is that guy still on?
No. No, he's gone. No, it's you now.
Okay, sorry. These people like him that call in with these specious arguments that make no sense. We need to stop countenancing their ignorance and just say, you know, go do some reading, go read The Interceptor, go listen, you know, and then come back and call us, because his claims were outrageous. I mean, ridiculous. We got to come together. Oh, really? We're going to come together with people who murder others? I mean, you know, and it happens a lot. These guys come in and they take over the show. And, you know, I honestly was just going to speak to the engineer to say, you know, somebody has to just cut these people off and say, go do your homework and then call me back. Because all we're doing is reacting. And that's why I think you have this feeling of it's not going anywhere. What does the word Antifa mean to the general public? It inspires some kind of fear. Most people don't even know what it is. So all we're doing on the left is reacting to these racist murderers. And I'm sorry that this is completely spontaneous. I didn't think it out because I was just going to tell the engineer, like I said, you know, you got to cut these people off and make room for people who are sincere in their thinking.
Well,
and what
you should use your time to say what you think. Like,
wasn't prepared. I'm going to have to go, but I'm sorry that I said that.
No, that's quite all right.
But, you know, I mean, people need to really engage intelligently. These people are not intelligent. Most of them are agents. They are not intellectually curious, and that is what we need to fight. Okay. We need to stop reacting to fear. Okay. I grew up in Montevilla. I went to Vestal. I've been here forever. My grandfather is John Wilson, who founded the library, and I'm done with racism and murderers.
Okay. Well,
thank you very much for calling. Bye.
Okay. I guess that wasn't Jane, but now we will go to Jane. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just, I wish I could talk about a few things, but if I had to pick one, I'd just say that people should be concerned with the Trump administration. The rise of the Republican Party, and I mean, our U.S. military has been on a road to privatization for quite some time. That's part of the Republican strategy that should be discussed, especially with, I mean, me in particular, I watch a lot of Japanese stuff, and we just put Bill Hagerty in there, and that's it, man. That is, like you're talking, that's Mitt Romney's homeboy. I mean, we're putting that over. We are the military in Japan. That's the South China Sea. Even the Japanese are concerned about China and the rise of an Iranian military presence, and you got Korea. And their end game is privatization and all this stuff that, yes, it needs to be talked about. And I do think, you know, for me as someone who's mixed race, and I happen to be Slavic on the white side of my family, you know, that Nazi symbol was meant for my people. And you can look up what Slavic is. I'm Czechoslovakian. I think people should be deeply, not just like, I mean, people should be very concerned. And it's not paranoia. I think, you know, I'm not sure what's going to happen in the future. But, yes, people, a lot of people who are not American, I see people from Finland talking smack about our U.S. military. Beware of the U.S. military-industrial complex. I mean, people are right there with us. They're watching Trump, and Americans need to get a clue. And I'm sorry I'm not very coherent because I'm not used to talking on the radio.
That's all right.
But I just wanted to say, on a side note, I wanted to recommend I actually wanted to recommend Peace in the Mississippi as a soundtrack, because Jimi Hendrix and I don't know, I guess everyone's branding everyone, the older people, Jen Zeppelin, they knew what was up. And I think people need to get a clue, you know. I mean, my family enlisted before 9/11, and I won't go into it, but it doesn't look like you think. I have a huge list of complaints, and my family is not white. I have a nephew that ran away.
Okay.
I think very concerned about this administration. People should be out on the streets, and the people who show up looking all KKK with their swastikas, you know, that was meant for that. That is like some weird rising concoction of, I don't even know what that is, because it's like,
okay, well,
that's our prison.
Okay, thank you for calling. Appreciate that. We're talking about the rally that happened and a confluence of things, including the Republican chair of Multnomah County's Republican Party going to this so-called alt-right rally on Sunday and using it to recruit Republicans. He's also been known to say that he would be glad to use these militia members, the three percenters, the Oath Keepers, others, as protection for events. I don't know, for maybe their party headquarters. And then one of these militia members was seen assisting, at least one, assisting an arrest, Federal Protection Service arrest of a counter-protester at the rally on Sunday. The Mike Marshman, the police chief, was telling an untruth on OPB, Oregon Public Broadcasting, yesterday when he said that Portland police didn't demand photos of demonstrator IDs after they had been kettled together, along with some journalists. Really foolish to say that, especially if there's a bunch of journalists who are it's happening to, who can document it. I'm sure other people documented. Lots of people have mentioned that. So Marshman was telling the untruth. He was also very wishy-washy, waffling about the whole issue of private citizens assisting cops, you know. And it's ironic that they mentioned, the Simpson mentioned the sometimes police, you know, sometimes private citizens like even security guards, people who are sort of in security already but not officially police, will assist in arrests. So then you've got these right-wing militia people assisting arrests, and the chair of the Multnomah County Republican Party saying he would like to use them as security. And then they're doing security at this alt-right event in downtown Portland on Sunday. And that blurring the line between, you know, the idea that private security can assist, you know, like people doing theft prevention at a store, you know, private security, you know, patrolling the neighbor, you know, the downtown neighborhoods, whoever, whatever they're called, walking along downtown, that could, you know, potentially assist because they saw someone do something. So, you know, they might chase the person down and call police at the same time, and they assisting that, they might need to, you know, physically assist them in a certain circumstance. I mean, that might itself be problematic, but then you have these non-actual private security people acting as private security and being basically sanctioned by the Republican Party chair to do so, while you've got, you know, this Trumpism and the rise out into the open of this alt-right, by all appearances fascist movement, and you have this confluence of things that's truly frightening. So let's go to Michael. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi. Let me get you off the speakerphone. Hi.
Yeah, you were on yesterday, weren't you?
No.
Okay.
I was on Monday.
Monday, that's right.
No.
Go ahead.
Okay. I think there's like this elephant in the room that you're not talking about.
What's that?
And the elephant in the room is that the Black Bloc is known for attacking police, throwing things at them, doing property destruction. These right-wing rallies don't do that. So if the cops are paying more attention in the direction of the Black Bloc, it's appropriate given what the Black Bloc does.
And the it depends on one's, you know, political analysis as well. I mean, do you believe that the police are protecting private property and basically the interests of the wealthy?
I believe, well, you know, you say the interests of the wealthy, and these Black Bloc people go and they break windows, and whose windows?
Well, you're not answering my question. That's an indirect
The question, strategy. And your question specifically is?
Well, whose interest do the police serve?
The police serve the interest of keeping people from doing violence against other people or their property.
Or their property. There you go. So they do.
Well, yeah.
Yes. Okay. So there's a fundamental political difference than you and I have, and you seem to have with a lot of people who are talk show hosts, and that is what really is difficult to get at in a short period of time, especially when you call with only 5 minutes left, and
well,
we have two other callers.
But you had other callers.
Right. Anyway. So yeah. I mean, that's we're talking about political differences here.
Well, do you think it's okay to just wantonly destroy anybody's property?
You're saying wantonly destroy? No, I mean, this is a difficult question, which again we don't have really time to get into because there's only 5 minutes left. I think that the capitalist system is fundamentally on an omnicidal and suicidal path. It has created a climate change that is now threatening to release gigatons of methane from the seabeds. The permafrost is melting all over. The glaciers are melting. The Antarctic ice sheet is melting. The Arctic ice is at a record minimum. The species loss has been so dramatic. The capitalist colonial system has destroyed communities all over the earth. The oceans are dying. This is a dead and dying and omnicidal system, and it must be destroyed and it must be taken down and by any means necessary fundamentally. But in this particular case, I think the whole issue of the Black Bloc is a complex political phenomenon within the oppositional movement, that, and I don't believe you're part of that, so I'm not sure the kind of discussion we could actually have about that.
Well, all I have to say to that is, if you think that it's effective politics that will gather enough people together to go in the direction you want to go, if you think it's effective politics to have a bunch of thugs wearing black and masks and hammers breaking windows and smashing cars in downtown Portland, if you think that's effective politics...
No, I didn't say that. I said it's
going to prove to you that you're wrong.
Well, fair enough. I didn't say that I did think it was effective politics. I think it's within the people who believe that the capitalist system needs to be taken down. It's an important conversation, but I'm not sure you're actually on the same page with that. So I'm not sure we can actually have a discussion about that on that particular subject. But anyway, let's go to one more caller before we have to get off the air. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hello?
Yeah. Hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I've lived in Portland for most of my life now, and I don't think any of these any parties walking around town destroying anything is going to help any cause in a favorable manner.
But we're talking about this rally on Sunday, where actually there weren't people going around destroying things. So
there was. Yeah, there was lots of things.
Where was
destroyed.
That? Where
on Sunday?
Yeah.
Oh, there were three storefronts broken into.
Specifically.
Yeah, there were three storefronts broken into downtown.
Where?
Which ones? I wasn't there on Sunday. I couldn't tell you.
Well, I mean, so you have to have
I watched a live Facebook feed.
Okay.
And on one of the news things, they had a couple live feeds going. And there was, they were showing one of the storefronts being broken into down there.
Uh-huh.
Now, this isn't the first rally that's happened in Portland.
Well, listen,
it seems like there's a rally... It seems like there's a rally or a gathering every other week, and that's not going to do any good.
Well, listen, again, we only have 2 minutes left, and we're not going to be able to get into this in a deep way, so we're just going to have to leave it there.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, it seems like you got a counter answer for anything. That fella earlier that called in that said everyone needs to stand up together, that sounded good to me. Everyone does need to come
together.
But on what basis?
On what basis? What's the common thread?
What is it? You see,
what is it?
That people are being separated.
Well, what's the common thread?
The common thread is that we all live together. We all are.
But how do we live together? And how do we deal with the vast, powerful economic interests that are destroying us and our communities? How do we do that?
See, that's people separating ourselves from each other. We're picking teams.
It's an economic and social system. It's an economic and social system that has already separated us from the very, very beginning.
What does 100 people gathering at Washington Square have anything to do with the social?
Oh, I don't know. Everybody gets back to that. I don't know. I mean, it's something. But we got to go, man.
That did nothing.
Yeah, okay.
None of those rallies helped do anything for the economy.
Sorry about that. We're the economy. The economy is the goddamn problem. Anyway, we got to get out of here. We got another rousing song to to leave us with. This is Paul Rowland with KBOO Talk Radio. Thank you for listening.
Freedom is a word often heard today, but if you want to keep it, there's a price to pay. Each generation's gotta win it anew, 'cause it's not something handed down to you. Freedom isn't free. Freedom isn't free. You gotta pay a price, you gotta sacrifice for your liberty.
There was a general by the name of George, with a small band of men at Valley Forge. Left the comfort of home for the cold and ice. They won independence 'cause he paid the price.
Freedom isn't free. Freedom isn't free. You gotta pay a price.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Big Pharma, Market Failure, on Friday, June 9th at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Corporate CEO Richard Master will speak with his new documentary, which focuses on the dynamics behind the escalating cost of pharmaceuticals in the U.S. and the impact of soaring healthcare costs on U.S. businesses, working families, and our